NAMA is coming to an end nearly two decades after it was set up in the absolute wreckage of the crash. So, was it a necessary fix to save the banks, to stabilise the economy, or did it quietly reshape the property markets in ways we're still living with today?
Developers are in trouble, banks are owed huge sums, and it's all adding to the economic crash. NAMA will take over the properties of the top 50 developers by Christmas, and 10,000 loans by next June. NAMA will be able to sell, retain or develop properties. The project could last for 7 to 10 years.
It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. And 17 years on from the financial crash, one of the state's most powerful and controversial institutions is being wound down, NAMA. Set up in 2009 to take billions in bad property loans off the Irish banks, is now effectively finished with legislation moving through the Dáil to formally dissolve it. At the time, it was pitched as a rescue operation, a way to clean up the banks, get lending moving again, and ultimately, I suppose, protect taxpayers from even deeper losses. NAMA says it generated nearly 50 billion in cash, cleared tens of billions in debt, and returned more than 5 billion to the state. Said it delivered homes, it redeveloped the Docklands. And yes, that is certainly one way to look at it. But there is another. Were assets sold too cheaply? Did so-called vulture funds make enormous profits with developers being frozen out? And did the state ultimately prioritise speed over long-term value? Well, here, for a NAMA post-mortem, I am delighted to be joined by the editor of the Business Post, Danny McConnell. Danny, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thanks, Ciara. Thanks for having me.
I was watching the debate in the Dáil last week, and there was literally a handful of characters talking about NAMA, a lot of them critical of NAMA. But I'm telling you, it was a handful, less than 10 people there. And I think to see this agency being wound down and to see so little being said about it fails really to reflect how consequential NAMA was.
100%, Ciara. And as you said in your introduction there, I mean, the scale of the job tasked of NAMA when it was created. I mean, like the landscape in which it was drawn up, it was announced in 2009. The country was literally on fire. The state had just nationalised Anglo-Irish Bank, which was a complete and utter basket case. Irish Nationwide was in the same category. And ultimately, those two organisations were joined together, become the IBRC, as we, you know, or the Irish Banking Resolution Corporation, which was ultimately kind of liquidized in 2013. But there was this cacophony of bad loans across the bank sheet or the balance sheets, not just of Anglo and Irish Nationwide, but of AIB and of Bank of Ireland and elsewhere. So Brian Lenihan, who was the finance minister at the time, took the decision along with his key officials, Alan Ahern, who was his economic advisor, and others, decided that, you know, the idea of setting up a bad bank, this idea that you put all the bad and distressed assets into this bad bank, was a good idea. Clear out the bad stuff from the rest of the banks, put them on a financial solid footing and let them grow again. Obviously, the numbers involved were staggering. I mean, NAMA took over, you know, a book value of somewhere in excess of 70 billion. I think 74 billion was the exact total.
Yeah.
But paid 38 billion for it. So it was, I think, a 58% write down on the loans. That was deeply controversial at the time because obviously there was a sense that the state was essentially writing off 40-odd billions worth of assets. Now, maybe that was always going to have to be done, but it was deeply controversial at the time. And ultimately, what NAMA's job was, it was initially given a 10-year timescale to do its work and then be wound down. That ultimately got extended to 15 years. But ultimately, it got going in the teeth of controversy about how it was going to do its business, its relationship with developers, its rather opaque structures. It was really quite secretive at the start and, you know, took a very aggressive approach to the media. Anyone who was sort of digging away, people like myself or others who were digging away at NAMA, you know, we were given pretty short treatment by NAMA because they were aggressively defending their record and what they were trying to do. They, you know, rabidly, you know, tried to counter down any sort of negative coverage, etc. like that. So they were very aggressive, and we heard from a lot of developers, very similar sort of criticisms of NAMA, how they engage with them. So it was controversial from the get go.
dealt its business in behind closed doors to a large degree, and has certainly, I think, managed to bamboozle politicians, and you know, has done its business away from the public glare, certainly in more recent years, because politicians, quite frankly, said it's too complicated, we can't understand it, and ultimately that has allowed Nama deal. You know, when you think the irony of, you know, the political establishment getting caught up and rightly sort of annoyed at, you know, bike sheds and the amount of money around kind of a bike shed or a security hood at Leinster House being built, whereas billions and billions and billions of euro have been at stake through the hands of Nama, and has garnered very little attention and very little focus from the political establishment, and I say some elements of the media.
Was there international precedent for a body like Nama, or was Ireland doing something really unusual?
No, it had been done elsewhere, and Peter Bacon, the economist, was the sort of the father of NAMA. It was his sort of, like, he'd been kind of tasked by Brian Lenihan to come in and sort of develop it from an Irish context, but it had been done elsewhere in Sweden, and had been done elsewhere, you know, so they were sort of taking, but I suppose the big criticisms of NAMA was the Irish kind of structure took the good parts or the easy parts, but didn't do the hard part in terms of clearing out the banks, in terms of, you know, kind of sacking people immediately or doing the sort of things that needed to be done in how it got, in how it operated. So, like, I mean, you know, for example, there was the Mellon Bank in 1988, which basically kind of they ended up having to put in, this is in Pittsburgh in the United States, they ended up having to put in a bad bank. The Swedish crisis, as I refer to, of 1992, you know, where three of the four major banks were ultimately insolvent, and the Swedish government had to intervene. So, and it's been used elsewhere in places like France, Finland, Indonesia and Belgium. So this is a model that has been used across the board in a lot of countries. But for us, obviously, Ireland's one is the one that resonates very, 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 very sharply. But as I said, given the scale of it, given the personalities involved, there was always criticisms about how we adopted that bad bank model and implemented it here. There's a lot of criticisms that we didn't do it properly.
Who was running NAMA, Daniel? Who was working within NAMA? What was it actually costing the state to keep this agency up and running for all these years?
Yeah, so ultimately it was created as an offshoot of the National Treasury Management Agency, the NTMA, which is the body that runs separate from the Department of Finance or the Central Bank, and the base that manages Ireland's money that goes out on the bond markets and borrows on Ireland's behalf. So they decided it was in that construct that they would create an offshoot entity called the National Asset Management Agency, or NAMA. It was headed by a chap by the name of Brendan McDonagh, and his name has obviously come back into the ether in more recent times because he had been linked with the housing czar position last year, and that obviously imploded given his role in NAMA. It deemed to be quite controversial, so he ultimately pulled away from that. But a guy called Frank Daly, who was a long-standing kind of finance and revenue official, was named as NAMA's chair, and they were seen very much as a double act, McDonagh and Daly, in the early years of NAMA. They were the ones who fronted up all the sort of the committee hearings. They were the ones who did all the media. They were the ones who kind of had to answer, and they were the accountable officers for NAMA. But they put together a team, a highly specialized team, at the start, you know, for people to be able to go in, deal with the banks, put a sense on all these assets, put a sense on all of these, you know, kind of the distressed loans, identify the exposure to the state. This is highly technical, highly complex, highly legalistic work. And it also meant that, and another source of controversy was, a lot of these people were extremely well paid. So Brendan McDonagh's salary was in the 430,000 per year. You know, and a lot of senior people in Armour were you know, commanding very, very high salaries.
All those empty derelict sites that's down along the quays, all the way down to the Tree Arena and to the back onto Sheriff Street, they'll all be developed with new, shiny, really, really promising and well-designed buildings, which will deliver both housing and commercial space.
Homeless people are not going to be in a position to buy a brand new apartment in the Docklands. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, I think the issue is here. You've got different markets, but I mean, NAMA will have delivered 2,000 social units by the end of this year, and as part of this program, there'll be probably another 2,000 units between now and 2020.
Another major controversy in more recent times is that people who were in NAMA have moved on and sort of big, you know, it's kind of gamer turned go or you know poacher turned gamekeeper. They've gone into the entities that they were dealing with, given their expertise in NAMA, and that has raised a lot of questions. question marks around the appropriateness, cooling off periods and all that kind of stuff, and whether or not it was appropriate for them to make that jump directly. But there has been, again, though, has been another source of controversy. But it was a relatively small team, separate from any other, you know, kind of entity of the state by the NTMA. It did its own business. But as I said, when it was dealing with, say, public facing, dealing with politicians and also dealing with the media, it adopted a very, I would say, robust and defensive mindset, and would go to war and would demand, you know, clarifications and retractions and you know, from people where they didn't like, you know, some of the tone or tenor of pieces that were written. So they were very, very combative, and you could see that, and that sort of came to fore during some of the more controversial episodes of NAMA's life, like Project Eagle, which was the sale of its Northern Ireland portfolio, which ultimately became the subject of a criminal investigation.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, actually, because you mentioned controversies there and that scandal around Project Eagle did, and I think has, cast a long shadow over NAMA. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this was ultimately, so there was a decision taken to sell its entire Northern Ireland portfolio to a company called Cerberus in 2014. There were allegations of about payments and fees to intermediaries connected to political figures, and ultimately it just meant that there was this nexus again of politicians mixing with business people, mixing with kind of developers, etc. That there was something fishy about all this, and there were a lot of times in the Dáil, like people like Nick Wallace and others in the Dáil raised, you know, issues around NAMA consistently underprivileged. You know, the state and NAMA always insisted that there had been no wrongdoing, there had been no sort of inappropriate behavior or anything, or that there was essentially, you know, Mr. Mick Wallace, you know, said that, you know, there were people acting as part of the cabal to ensure that this deal went through. And ultimately all of these allegations were rejected. It was, as I said, subject to investigations and criminal, but ultimately it was found that no criminal wrongdoing was done by anyone in NAMA or NAMA itself. Mm-hmm. But it did absolutely impact on the public confidence of NAMA, given it lasted for so long, and given, I suppose, the charge that was at the heart of the allegations sort of again fed this narrative that it was a kind of a ready up. It obviously did do some damage to NAMA's reputation, and I think post Project Eagle we noticed, you like, look at how quiet NAMA had gone since Project Eagle, like 10, 11 years ago now at this point. You know, it deliberately sought to remove itself from the public domain. And clearly as the country improved and the lot of the country improved, the focus on NAMA became less sharp. And I think it certainly has fallen down the political agenda. However, there are those who are still very critical, like, and Johnny Ronan in comments to us only in the last few months, and his group, deeply, deeply critical of NAMA, you know, saying that it essentially was a large contributor to the housing crisis, given one, its dominant position, two, how slow it ultimately was in releasing properties, etc. That, so there are still very vocal critics of NAMA and how it's done its business over the last 15 years.
There were some absolutely massive portfolio disposals after Project Eagle, right? That's between 2015 and 2018. I'm thinking Project Arrow, Project Jewel, there was Project Tolka at one stage, and they were sold to big global investment firms. Do you think they contributed to the rise of those international investment funds into the Irish property scene?
Without question, they did. But ultimately, there was a decision taken by the then Finance Minister, Michael Noonan,
To go after these.
Because I think what Noonan's approach was, he wanted to establish a floor on the Irish market to grow again. Because again, if you think back to 2011, 2012, you know, nothing was being sold, nothing was being built. And that meant, and like, you know, housing output had fallen from 93,000 units a year to virtually less than 10,000. Like, I mean, the market had collapsed completely. So I think the government at that point, you know, again, to huge controversy from the likes of Richard Boyd Barrett and Paul Murphy and others on the left, you know, the idea that, you know, venture capitalists or venture funds were coming in here and buying up or funding development here was seen as very controversial, because ultimately they were seeing that this was large corporations coining it off the Irish taxpayers' back and you know, kind of freezing out kind of smaller developers and essentially, you know, cornering the market for themselves. I think the reality is that given the collapse in output for so long. It like we're still paying the price for that shortfall a decade or so later. And you know, the state cannot do and make up all of that ground. I think the latest forecast is that we need investment of about 20 billion a year. The state can only deliver between 9 and 10. So the rest of it has to come from the private sector. But it did. But those big portfolio sales absolutely contributed to that narrative that, you know, Ireland kind of all bent over backwards to welcome these big controversial venture capitalists into this country. I think that adage and I think that description is unfair. I think you do need to have that mix. But, you know, as someone who was in Leinster House through all of this period and reporting on it the whole time, you could see how controversial it was.
NAMA repaid its debts years earlier than was expected. That was back in, I think, 2017. What's it been doing since then, Daniel? Why has it taken so long to close down, to wind down?
I think ultimately the pragmatic decision really was that it needed to finish out a certain number. There was a certain number of things that, you know, and a lot of these projects and a lot of these things have a long tail. So they needed time to basically wind it down to a particular point where it naturally, you know, was stopping doing any new business. It was just winding itself down and clearing its books. And with property, as you know, between all the vicissitudes of, you know, planning and kind of everything else and legal complexities and legal challenges and all the rest of things can just take an awful lot longer than you might anticipate. As I said in the in my opening comments, NAMA's original shelf life was supposed to be 10 years. It ultimately has lasted for 15. But as you have seen from that point that, you know, where it sort of broke even, if you want to, you know, take that perspective, you know, you have seen a very deliberate and systemic and kind of staggered winding down of its operation. So the operation has been getting smaller and smaller year on year, and as its kind of reach has declined. In later years, there have obviously been calls for NAMA to do more in terms of the delivery of social homes, et cetera, that are making homes available for the housing crisis for the state to kind of roll them out. I think NAMA itself would probably argue that it's been, you know, they would see that not in its core remit and therefore has struggled to maybe keep a pace with the sort of expectations that may have been coming in relation to that. But you have seen that winding down of the organisation from its core job. Ultimately, NAMA will always insist that it's now returned a profit to the state. You know, it has washed its own face. Even though the cost of NAMA was extremely expensive, it would say that it has washed its own face. There are others absolutely will say NAMA was not adventurous enough, didn't deliver the sort of return to the state that it should have.
That was basically too cautious. I mean, I'm thinking about things like Battersea Power Station in London, which later became one of Europe's most valuable redevelopment projects. And critics would have said Ireland just exited that too early. The same with maybe Carton House was at NAMA at one stage. The square in Tala, the shopping centre, Boland's Quay, which we now associate with Google occupation, they got out of all of those projects. So do you think there were missed opportunities, or is it unfair to say that, Daniel, because we're saying it with the benefit of hindsight?
I think there's probably a bit of a nuance in there, Ciara, because I think what you're saying from an NAMA perspective, you say, listen, if you've kind of identified a certain threshold over which you're saying we're happy to sell out or happy to move on or cash out, and you've achieved that, then you kind of say job done, move on. And, you know, but I think it is always going to be open to, you know, when you're, I suppose, given the amount of money the state had to put into the banks and elsewhere because of the financial crash, you know, there is always going to be that criticism that we weren't adventurous enough, or we weren't kind of wily enough in terms of seeing the upside or the potential upside of some of these deals. But NAMA, I think, would say, listen, it has to be cautious, it has to be prudent in its dealings. I think there will always be that criticism that they were too prudent and too cautious. But ultimately, you know, the question would be, was NAMA a good thing or a bad thing? I think, you know, ultimately my conclusion would be it was a necessary evil for the time that we found ourselves. I think it did become too big. I did think it probably had a distorting impact on the market. And I think some of the criticisms labelled at us in terms of its impact on how it dealt with certain entities and certain people, I think are legitimate. And I ultimately think, though, you know, hopefully we never have to see the likes of NAMA in the Irish space ever again, because it wasn't, you know, it was a necessary evil in terms of cleaning up really nasty and kind of unperforming banks and bank assets. But it did have a very wide societal impact, and probably hasn't, that impact probably isn't recognised fully given, I suppose, the complexities that NAMA operated in all the way through its lifetime.
Danny, thanks so much for bringing all that insight to us here on News Talk Daily today.
Thanks, Ciara.
That's it from News Talk Daily for today. We'll be back again tomorrow. If you want to get in touch, do drop me a line on Instagram @OfficialKiaraD. Until tomorrow morning, take care. Bye-bye.